Support for The Trend comes from members of the local programming fund. I'm Cass Harrington. This is The Trend, where each week we select a single topic and arrange three perspectives around that topic. Today, it's weddingnomics. What exactly is driving the costs of weddings? Who benefits? And how have weddings changed? And where are they going? We'll find out today and more. But first up, in this segment, the business of weddings. For this show, to do a little research, I went to Super Bride Sunday a few weeks ago. It was an expo where a spokeswoman told me there were more than 700 brides in attendance, 90 booths selling their wares. It was a little overwhelming, but I heard things like this.
So many of us as girls, you know, we always dream about being princess or, you know, meeting that Prince Charming, and you just almost like fantasize about it. Even before you maybe meet Prince Charming, you just have this envision of what you've always thought your wedding day would be like.
But I also heard things like this.
I just don't think that it's a big deal to go all out for your wedding. I mean, it's one day and there's certain things, like, if you really like it, to spend money on, but I got my wedding dress from a secondhand store. So, I mean, it costs $300 opposed to $1,200, and I like it, and as long as you like it, I don't see the problem with it.
One of the vendors there was Piece of Cake, which is a bakery on Main Street. The owner told me that this is a big event. It's an opportunity for vendors to meet brides and kind of sway them their way in preparing for the big day. So my colleague John Gibson stopped by that bakery to hear what the latest trends are in wedding cakes.
Walking into Piece of Cake on Main Street in downtown Evansville, you encounter an intoxicatingly sweet aroma as crews bake, create, and sell cakes, cupcakes, and more. I spoke to Piece of Cake owner Kate Sisko, who started the tasty business 16 years ago. How much change have you seen in weddings and wedding cakes?
Oh, it has night and day. I mean, just 360-degree change in how things are from when we first started out. So,
what are some of those changes?
Well, you know, things have kind of gone full circle. Yeah, they say that happens, and it's true. You know, when we first started out, of course, we were little and unknown, so we got a lot of the budget brides and, you know, people looking for a good deal. And, of course, we were a great deal when we first opened up. And, you know, little name, but getting our name out there. And then as we grew and our reputation grew, we found ourselves, you know, getting some more decadent-looking wedding cakes, some more expensive cakes. And things have changed again with the economy. So people are definitely on a budget. All the brides seem to be, you know, they've got a price point that they want to stick to, and we make sure we make it work for them.
So at this point in Piece of Cake's history, you'd say you offer both low budget and some pretty fancy cakes as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people think that we just do the high end because we've been around and that we've got a good reputation started. But we absolutely can compete with the newer places popping up. We want to be able to help all the brides.
Well, our program here is called The Trend. What are some of the trends that you're seeing now in the wedding and wedding cake business?
Sure. When we first started out, of course, fountains and staircases and pillars and was the way to go. You know, we just did a lot. Most of our cakes had those kind of things. You know, now we very seldom do anything like that. You know, people want a silver stand to put their cake on. You know, people don't do the bride and groom on top for the most part. We do more monograms, and people are getting things off Pinterest and Etsy, very, very big. People are wanting multicolored cakes, not just the plain white cake or the colors with the flowers. They want actual texture, multi-designs in the cake. So, I mean, definitely people, they get on Pinterest, they get on those kind of things, and they get their ideas flowing, and we try to work with them.
Yeah. How do you go about pricing the cakes? Like we said, there's a large range of prices, I guess.
Certainly. Well, we do several hundred wedding cakes a year, and our girls are basically, it's how long it takes the decorator to do it. So once we've done something, we go, okay, this is how long this took. And so if it falls within a certain range, then it's our budget cake. And then if it's, wow, this was a whole lot of work, then we know to kind of price it a little higher so it's worth us doing. So the pricing is in the amount of time it takes to do a cake.
I see. Does the price of ingredients, sugar, that kind of thing, weigh into the overall price?
Well, it does sometimes if we're thinking about raising a price or changing a price. Mm-hmm. But we, to make it easier for the brides, for us when we're doing a consult, it used to be cakes were different prices depending on the flavor or the icing. Or anymore, we just kind of, it's all one price. It's easier for the bride. She can have any of her choices that she wants. We have over 24 different flavors to choose from, and she can have any of them for that price.
We're talking to you just a few days before Valentine's Day. You say this is a busy, busy time of year for you, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Valentine's Day, the busiest day of the entire year.
But once you get past Valentine's Day, then do you see sort of an upswing in weddings and wedding cakes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll get some people who get engaged on Valentine's Day, so they'll come in and see us. You know, they come in for their consultation, and we give the brides a complimentary consultation and give them four different flavors to try. But yeah, spring, April, May, June, the busiest wedding months.
Yeah. You can't have a wedding without a cake, right?
No, absolutely not. You need the bride, you need the groom, and you need the cake.
Sounds great. Well, anything else to add that we haven't touched on here?
Well, like I said, Valentine's Day is our busiest time, and if you need strawberries or anything like that, we're hand dipping them for Valentine's Day.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate you chatting with us here, and happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
That was my colleague John Gibson speaking with Kate Sisko, the owner of Piece of Cake. The bakery is a major seller of wedding cakes in the Evansville area. Weddings nowadays are becoming more and more detailed. Brides are requesting down to the monogrammed napkin details, specific themes, arrangements, playlists, and to help them navigate the language of love, an army of devoted wedding planners await. I caught up with one here in Evansville, Sandra Hadley, who's a self-described event engineer. She owns Planning Forever. And we were talking a little bit off the mic about, you know, how you got into it. So you're in your late 20s and you did it for a friend for free.
I did, because I didn't want to wear a dress or stand up there, and I was doing corporate event planning in California, where I'm from, and I said, I'll just stand in the back. And then it kind of snowballed a couple times. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. And then I got pregnant, and then we moved here. So that got put on the back burner.
And so I guess, how long has Planning Forever been in business here?
10 years.
Yeah.
I started part-time at first, but then now I've been full-time since 2006.
So, okay, 2006. Take me back there. What was the first wedding you planned like?
Well, the first wedding's back in probably about 2003, 2004. I really opened it up on a fluke. And I have to say, it wasn't because I've always approached my wedding planning business as a business.
Mm-hmm.
I love weddings. Mm-hmm. I do get caught up before the bride walks down the aisle. That's my favorite part. You know, they're excited. And I love love. I've been married 20 years. So when I approached it, I thought I was in a corporate job. I wasn't super happy, but I was like, I want to do something on the side. I needed to be doing some things.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a friend who was getting married, and I told her what I used to do. And she said, you know, I would really love, she'd planned it, I would really love someone there on the day and help me go down the road a little bit. And she paid me. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay. And I, you know, talked to a few other people about it, and just opened up, sold 6 weddings, and just never looked back.
Well, how have weddings changed in that amount of time, if they have?
Oh, they've changed so much. Just the
really? From, so much?
The regular things of boy meets girl, falls in love, the family dynamics, the crazy family dynamics, the great family dynamics are the same. But what people want and want to do, we've seen it ebb and flow. Also finding the right clients. We're typically not the gymnasium type of, they're not going to hire us. We'll be out of their budget. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that kind of wedding.
Sure.
If that's what you can afford, I say go for it. If you want to have a backyard barbecue after your little nuptials, but our clients are looking for something a little different and more unique because of the internet and blogging has made a huge impact on how people want to design their wedding.
Really? You think the internet has shaped
absolutely
that personalization?
Absolutely. Much more than wedding magazines. We had a lot of wedding magazines, but they all started to go out of business about 2008, quite a few of them. We still have a few, but the internet is right there. Everyone's on their smartphone or their iPad, and there's blogs, and of course, you know, the lovely Pinterest.
Of course, Pinterest, which has been a huge theme in this conversation. So many vendors, brides I've spoken with, said Pinterest is crucial. Even girls who don't have boyfriends have their wedding almost planned.
They do. And I tell them, I said, I know you have a Pinterest board when I meet them. Uh-huh. I said, so immediately make it secret because I can't stand guests to show up at the wedding and go, oh yeah, I saw that on your Pinterest board.
Oh, right.
You know.
Right. So it's the effect, if I'm hearing you correctly, is it's getting people to really play up that personalization of a wedding, whereas before maybe it wasn't quite as...
I think more people went through the motions. Mm-hmm. We have to do a toast. We must do this. We have to do that. We have to throw a garter. We have to toss a bouquet. We have to, you know, it was a drone of forward motion. But now it's so much different. I mean, a lot of our brides don't even toss a bouquet or garter. This is your day. This is your wedding.
Well, and I wonder, I mean, if a client is approaching you with these ideas on Pinterest or on a blog that she sees online and starts garnering all these ideas of what she wants, is there a lot of pressure on you for perfectionism or some kind of ideal that just is so unattainable?
No, I mean, if they've got the money, we can do it. Right? You know, it's really, that's what it comes down to. I love the fact that people are having a Pinterest board. I don't mind it. What I have to do, though, sometimes reel them in. I'm like, dude, you are planning 5 weddings mm-hmm. in one. So we need to edit a little bit or we're going to go crazy. And I think they appreciate that approach because I'm non-emotional. I'm not their best friend. They hired me to tell them that. Uh-huh. They hired me for my advice and my experience. So I can do that. And you mm-hmm. have to prep yourself, especially if you're having an outdoor wedding. You have to be a risk taker. I ask them, are you a risk taker? Are you somebody who's going to curl up in a ball and cry? Because if you are, then we should not do that outdoor wedding mm-hmm. in June.
Are people spending more?
People are reducing their guest lists. Huh. And in some instances, reducing the total amount of investment in their wedding. But in other instances, I'm seeing smaller guest lists spending about the same, but the guest experience is fantastic. Mm. It's personal. It's intimate. We've had so many private residence weddings, so many 130 people. But I mean, we are serving foodies. I mean, great mm-hmm. food and, you know, there's gifts and mm-hmm. as opposed to inviting 500 of your closest friends, which isn't, you know, really true. So.
Right. Well, what about clients of different faiths or nationalities? Do you see variance on how much couples are willing to spend, say, if it's a traditional Indian wedding?
Indian weddings are like 3 days long, so this uh-huh. is going to be a lot more.
Right.
And they love to make sure that they are whatever they're going to spend is actually going to be a really good bang for their buck. But it's a 3-day event, so it's going to be a lot more than mm-hmm. just, you know, a Catholic wedding. I love doing different faith weddings. We've done a lot of different faiths, and so it's fun. You uh-huh. know, we had one wedding, which was, we had Jehovah Witness, we had agnostics, we had atheists, we had Catholics, and another one, a Methodist, uh-huh. all guests in the wedding and family members. So we had to have a straight up, could not be in a church, could not have anything that was any faith, so we wouldn't offend anybody.
Look at the bride, she is a glow.
Look at the groom, ready to go.
Where's the real star of the show?
Wow, what a wedding cake.
It stands over 6 stories high.
It took a year to bake.
9 months for the icing to dry.
Look at the ring.
This is The Trend, and I'm Cass Harrington. Today we're talking about weddingnomics, the economic impact of weddings in our region. Right now I'm talking with Sandra Hadley, the owner of Planning Forever. Up next, I'll ask her exactly how wedding businesses price their product and how these businesses are faring in a more frugal consumer economy.
When they cut the cake,
we will all be cheering. Wow, what a wedding cake.
That magical moment is here.
Now we can finally eat it and see it all disappear.
Well, speaking of negotiation, like where does it come from? Because it seems to, I mean, is it based off of an annual report coming from the wedding industry?
We don't have an, we're not we're not legalized in that way or whatever. There's a misnomer, and I write a lot about it in my blog about, you know, wedding planning, where because you've gone to the florist, for example, that's always one of the best ones. You go to the florist and you get a dozen roses, mm-hmm. and it's this price. And then you go in, you say, I would like a bridal bouquet. I'd like a dozen roses in my bridal bouquet.
And the price goes up, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why does that happen?
Because you are not getting a dozen roses in your hand. You're getting something that is going to be masterfully put together and taped, mm-hmm. so it stays together the whole day and it doesn't wilt. You've got the service that goes into that, the labor. You have the material that you have to purchase.
But, and venues do that too.
And then
if you have an event for 200 people, it's this much. But if you say it's a wedding and I have 200 people, it's more.
I haven't seen that.
Really?
No, I haven't. Because, I mean, I can do a corporate event and order the same food and have 200 people. And I can have a wedding and order the same food and have 200 people. That's the thing. You have to compare apples to apples. It's not fair. And what about that bride who calls you and has to meet with you 5 times? Mm-hmm. Is your time not worth something? It's going to be different.
Right.
But I haven't seen that with catering. I disagree.
I saw it in Chicago at a venue.
Okay. But around here, some of the bigger cities might do some of that markup. Mm-hmm. But you also have to know there's a demand. When there's a demand, there's going to be a higher increase in price. Isn't that way with everything? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with weddings. I could be making a lot more money going back to my sales job. I won't lie. But I have flexibility. I love what I do. I like being my own business person. So I do this because I like it. But wedding vendors are not raking in the bucks. We're not.
Mm-hmm. So where do those prices come from? They compare what other businesses do in the area?
Well, I think it can be centralized to your location of your area, because Chicago is different. Mm-hmm. Chicago has higher prices. I mean, you know, you have to look at the vendors too. I have liability insurance. I'm sure a lot of other planners out there don't have it here locally who are startups. I have expenses that I need to meet to be able to cover that. Going back to your question, I believe part of it is demographic. As you know, in Evansville, we're kind of in a bubble. We don't get the first hit in a recession, but we might lag out. So personally, I think each business person needs to take a look at what they want to do. If you want to open a business, I would ask you, Cass, how much money do you want to make this year? Why not? That's your business. What experience do you bring to the table? What do you offer that's unique and different? And if people want to pay you for that, then why is that begrudged? Why? That's not a ripoff. They're getting for what they pay for.
Is this a conversation you have with people often when they maybe...
No. None of my clients have ever talked about the wedding industry. Are they ripping us off or whatever? They're usually very excited about it. I'm not kidding. I've been doing this for a long time and I'm really good.
Well, looking at Evansville compared to other markets, do couples here spend more on certain things that other places might not? Are there a certain kind of hallmark Evansville or tri-state wedding that...
Well, I mean, you know, I talked about people reducing their guest list,
mm-hmm.
from what I see of my clients. But if you're going to go on the majority... So I network with other planners. Like, what are you doing in Napa, California?
Mm-hmm.
They're so different. You know, they have 24 people and it's glorious for that 24 people. But here... Stereotypically, we still have the 250 to 400 guests.
Big event.
Especially if my client's parents are business owners. We're community-based. We are a community. And when you've been in the community this long and your daughter's getting married, you're going to invite all these people. I think you don't find that in bigger cities because they're so transient.
Well, of the weddings you've planned over the years, is there one or two that really, I don't know, stands out that you kind of revisit in your mind?
Now, I love all my clients, but I think some of them have been challenges and adversity that we overcome. Probably my most memorable wedding that I talk about a lot, which is so funny. It was in Kentucky, and he was Australian. And she's born in Kentucky, Madisonville, but she has a Filipino background. So we had people come from the Philippines and come from Australia for the wedding. We had it outside, and, you know, it was gorgeous. I mean, we made the backyard. It was probably one of the first times we'd really done this, I had here locally. into like a 5-star hotel where we had the catering on point. And I mean, just perfection. We brought in a sushi maker, was making sushi right there. It was gorgeous. Every detail. We'd planned this for a year. Then I got the report. Someone said it's raining in Henderson. And so long story short, we had, we moved everything around. We had quarter size hail fall on us and no tents. I said, please get a tent for the band. And she didn't want a tent. The sky just opened up and you would think that the wedding would be ruined, but not at all. I mean, catering served it. We started serving out food differently. Sky opened up, double rainbow. Which they end up going to Africa on their honeymoon. There was a double rainbow.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Then I got goosebumps.
Then the rain came back and we ended up partying inside the basement. We lost, I gave all the tip money that we were going to give to the band because they went home. Mm-hmm. Their cords got submerged in water. They said, we're out of here. I had the sound engineer stay with an iPod. An Australian got on a piano and sang Waltzing Matilda. They bumped and grind until early hours. It was so much fun. So wow. You take a situation like that, mm-hmm. You know, take a big swig of your favorite alcoholic beverage, and then you just move on.
My last question, since we're looking at trends on this program, it's called The Trend. Another thing that we're starting to see more and more of is same-sex weddings with couples going to Iowa or Hawaii.
Yeah, because we can't have it here.
Now Illinois, and then coming back here and having receptions. Have you planned any same-sex weddings here?
I had two. They were going to do their vows. Contact me. Two different clients. I was already booked, and one of which I was actually out. This is when I started early, out of the country. And so I said, I'm so sorry I can't service you. I have not. I'm mm-hmm. totally open to it. I'm disappointed with the whole H1, what, I don't even know what they...
HJR3.
Hey, that's it. I was like, because I changed the name, I had it on 6. I'm disappointed with our state. So I think I haven't done it. I haven't seen too many of them yet.
Well, you say you have a network of wedding planners that yeah. you keep up with. Are there things that they're doing to market themselves in a way that they're, you know, gay friendly or?
Absolutely. The way the wording, it's down to the wording on the website and so forth. So it would open up a huge amount of revenue for everyone considered.
That was Sandra Hadley, a local event planner who owns Planning Forever. Don't toss that bouquet yet. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're looking at wedding costs by the numbers. And it's not what you've heard before.
Support comes in part from Raven Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Raven offers a selection of tire brands, including Michelin and Goodyear, along with complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at raventire.com. And support also from Evansville Day School, partnering with parents to offer a student-centered education program for students junior pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. More information at evansvilledayschool.org or 812-476-3039.
All right, we just heard from a few local wedding businesses. Next up in this segment, we're putting the numbers or the nomics in wedding nomics. While I was researching the numbers on wedding costs for this program, I noticed the numbers seemed extremely high, and they do vary somewhat depending on region. For example, in Vanderburgh County, you know, the average cost is $21,000, or in Warwick County, the average cost is $27,000, or the average in Henderson is about $20,000. But for the most part, it still seems astronomical, even prohibitive. So I found an article published in Slate magazine about a year ago about how the wedding industry publications report the average cost of weddings rather than the median, which could be a more accurate indicator when looking at how much people typically spend. So I called the writer, Will Remus, to hear how he puzzled through the statistics in his article. So I'm calling you today because of an article I found online, The Wedding Industry's Pricey Little Secret. It actually turns out to be a big secret that there's a discrepancy between an average that the industry reports, as in the average cost of a wedding, and how much really is more frequently spent on the cost of a wedding. Is that right?
That's right. So when my wife and I had gotten engaged and we started to think about the wedding, we did what I assume a lot of couples do these days, which is we Googled how much does a wedding really cost. You know, I mean, in a vacuum, you can sit there and dream up all sorts of figures in your head. Oh, we only want to spend $5,000 or $10,000, but you really want to get some background and context and know how realistic that is. So we Googled it, and every article out there tells you that the average cost of a wedding in the United States is something like $27,000 or $30,000. And if you look by state, in some states it's far more exorbitant than that. We were just blown away. How on earth can people afford that?
And it's done regionally as well. So I imagine you're in New York, right? So it must have been outrageous.
That's right. So I think one of the major surveys that goes around had the average cost of a wedding in New York at something like $74,000.
Oh, geez.
We don't even have, you know, we couldn't come up with $74,000 if you banged down the door and threatened to break our kneecaps. So that's what gave me the incentive to look into this and find out where are they really getting these numbers.
And when we say they, we're talking about magazines, yeah, publications. What is this number?
There are two major surveys that are widely cited in the press. One is put together by TheKnot.com and WeddingChannel.com, and another is done by Brides Magazine. So they're both done by media outlets within the wedding industry.
And so tell us about the discrepancy there. So what do you think is a more accurate number when we're talking about how much people typically spend on a wedding?
As I started looking into it, I ran across two things that I think really skew those numbers. The first thing is that, as I mentioned, the surveys are done by websites and magazines within the industry, and by necessity, they're surveying their own readers, their own members. So right off the bat, you are looking at a pool of people who are so interested in planning a fancy wedding that they've gone ahead and subscribed to a glossy magazine about brides, or they've gone ahead and registered on a website that helps you do all sorts of planning. And that's what pollsters would call selection bias.
And, so they've elected to do the poll.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so these are probably people who are well off. They have internet connections or free money to have a subscription to a wedding magazine, and they are so excited about their weddings that they're happily responding to a poll about it. But that's not actually the biggest problem with the figures. The biggest issue is right there in the word itself, average. You know, everybody cites the average, but a statistician will tell you that averages can be very misleading if you're trying to get a sense of what's typical. So to give you an example, let's say that in a given year, you know, in a town in Indiana, you have 100 people get married, 100 couples get married. 99 of them spend exactly $10,000 on their wedding. And one of them spends $100,000 on their wedding. You know, the wealthiest couple in town. It's the event of the season. Well, your average, even though 99 out of 100 people spent $10,000, your average is now $20,000. Because that one outlier skews the average. A better figure to look at if you're trying to get a sense of what's typical is the median. What is the amount where half of the couples spend more than that and half the couples spend less? So in the example I gave you earlier, the median would be $10,000, just as you'd expect. So I went ahead and asked the companies that do the surveys, what is the median? Is it different from the average? And it turns out, yes, it's very different.
And so let's talk about just how different is that median number.
To their credit, The Knot got back to me and willingly provided those numbers, which you'll never see in the public because it's the average that's always cited. But they told me that in 2012, when the average wedding cost in the United States was $27,000, the median wedding cost was $18,000. That's a big, big difference. And keep in mind, we're still talking about that special set of people who registered on TheKnot.com and answered that survey.
Huh. Wow. And so did you find all of this out during your wedding planning process?
I did, thankfully. You know, the average, the magazines will tell you that the reason they're doing these surveys, they're not trying to tell anybody how much they should spend on the wedding. They're very clear about that. They said, you know, don't, just because the average is $27,000 doesn't mean you have to spend $27,000. But what I found, and what I think is probably true of a lot of couples, is that even if you know that, it's really hard to resist being influenced by that figure. I mean, if you think that everybody else is out there spending $27,000, who wants to have a below-average wedding, right?
Right.
And so all of a sudden, expenses that you might have otherwise rejected start to seem reasonable. You know, somebody says, well, it's going to, you know, we have a cake cutting fee of $500. Oh my gosh, $500 to cut the cake. And then they say, well, you know, that's the average in the industry. Okay, I guess, you know, I guess that's
right.
How it's
done. And most couples are first-time buyers. They don't have anything to compare it to.
Yeah, and I'm not an expert on the industry, but I suspect that that is crucial to a lot of the economics of the wedding industry. It's the fact that when you're going in, when you're having a wedding, you know, in a lot of cases, as you said, it's your first wedding, you just have no idea. You don't know what things are supposed to cost. And so you're actually looking to the vendors. You're looking to the people who are trying to sell you something to find out what's reasonable. And then, as I said, when you go to look for objective information or independent verification on Google, you wind up thinking, well, gosh, I guess people really do spend $30,000 on their wedding.
So the Knot said, so the numbers are not for the consumers necessarily, it's for the industry. But the Knot isn't really selling anything, or these wedding magazines. I mean, what interest do they have in seeing that a cake maker makes way more than they just had produced a more accurate number? Does that make sense?
You know, I think you'd have to ask them about the reasons for doing that survey. I don't think that they're necessarily intentionally trying to inflate people's perception of the cost of weddings. It's possible, but I didn't necessarily get that impression from them. They were open and honest, and when I asked them about this, in fact, the editor of one of the magazines that I talked to didn't seem to get the distinction between average and median. You know, she said, well, you know, if we say $35,000 is the average, then it's just that. I mean, it's half the people spend more and half the people spend less. Well, as I've just explained, that's not what average means. And so it's possible that they themselves haven't considered the way in which using an average as opposed to a median might skew the result.
Insincere. I want a new life. A new life with you.
You're listening to The Trend on WNIN-FM and streaming online, WNIN.org. Right now, I'm talking with Will Oremus, a staff writer at Slate Magazine. He wrote an article called The Wedding Industry's Pricey Little Secret about the exorbitant wedding costs widely reported by publications. Coincidentally, he was planning his own wedding while researching for this piece. We'll hear how Will's discoveries shaped the big day for him and his fiancée at the time.
Hey, and here's what's more. I want a new life. A new life. Babe, let's get one thing clear. There's much more stardust when you're near.
After writing this article, have you picked up any other trends in the wedding industry, whether it is that ambiguous pricing, like you said, the cake cutting fee, or other things that people might not consider at first?
There were two main strands of feedback that I got to this story. I got a lot of feedback, and most people said, thank you so much. You made me feel better about the fact that I can only spend $5,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 on my wedding, and it can still be beautiful. It doesn't mean that I'm a cheapskate. So that was great to hear. But the other thing I heard was for small businesses that are in the wedding industry, it's not easy for them. You know, they're not trying to rip people off. They're not trying to, you know, they're not walking away with millions here at the expense of the poor suckers who are getting married. In most cases, they're just trying to get by. And, you know, I think the wedding industry is a hard industry to be in. The flow of weddings gets really, really heavy in the summer and then really light in the winter. You know, it's tough to get by for a small business in the wedding industry. And I think that when they charge fees that might seem exorbitant on their face, maybe they're exorbitant, but maybe that's just what they need in order to stay in business. You know, there is competition in the wedding industry. If somebody's really charging charging outrageous prices, you should be able to find something cheaper out there. And if you can't find something cheaper out there, it may just be that that's how much they need in order to make their business work. I know photographers in particular, it can sound incredible that you have to spend $2,000 to get someone to take some photos for a night. But of course, they had to invest up front in fancy equipment. They've spent time building up their skills. They have to travel out there.
And they probably don't have health benefits.
Exactly. They may not have health benefits. And then after they take the photos, they have to spend hours and hours pulling through them and picking the best ones and editing them for you. So that's the one caveat I would say, is that some fees that sound outrageous, you know, it may not be that they're trying to rip you off. They're just trying to make a living.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I imagine they probably rely heavily on those outlier Paris Hilton weddings for their bottom line.
Exactly. And this is one good justification for why the average figure can be useful. So if you're a couple trying to get a sense of what the typical couple spends, the average is not a good figure. But if you're in the wedding business, and, you know, you are trying to maximize the amount of revenue that you get over the course of a whole year, you do care about the outliers, right? One huge contract can make your entire month or make your whole 3 months. And so that $100,000 wedding that we talked about earlier in Indiana actually really does make a difference to you and can make your business for the year.
Will, my last question, how did all of this information affect you, and it was your fiancé at the time? Were there any decisions that you made that kind of manifested in your final wedding plans?
Yeah, I think knowing that the average wasn't as high as we had feared just helped us feel a little better. It helped us give us the confidence to say no to things when vendors were telling us, well, everybody does this. You know, everybody spends $1,000 on flowers. And we said, well, you know what? That's probably not true, first of all. And second of all, even if they do, we're going to go ahead and find a cheaper way to get some flowers for our wedding. Or we're gonna get a friend to take the photos for us. Or, you know what? We're not going to have that champagne toast. And I think we've ended up feeling really good about our wedding without a lot of the extras that the wedding industry might make you feel are essential.
Well, Will, thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks very much.
We're tying the knot on today's Weddingnomics conversation during this final segment. What trends are happening right now that are changing the wedding industry? We've already heard about Pinterest, a social networking site that lets you curate your own dream wedding. But what about same-sex marriage? There have been couples leaving the state to get married and returning back to Indiana. Here's Alex Jarvis. He and his husband, Robert Owen, married last November in Iowa, but they had a quintessentially Evansville reception here on their home turf.
Robert and I met through a mutual friend who introduced us and thought we would click. I asked Robert out. It was July 7th. And we did the quintessential Evansville date. We went to Taroni's on Main Street, had pizza, talked, decided to grab coffee and then walk the riverfront, and then went back to my house and watched a movie. Classic first date.
And how long had you all been dating before you got engaged?
That is up for discussion. We're kind of fuzzy on the year. Roughly four and a half years. We got engaged in September of 2013.
Okay, and I'm a sucker for romance. So tell me how he proposed. I understand.
Well, because of my job and his job, we spent a lot of time at French Lake for various conventions. He knows it's a favorite place of mine. It's a place that the historical value is just immense to me. So his parents came into town ostensibly for us to give them a tour of West Baden. And we go to West Baden. I'm trying to give a tour. I keep getting interrupted. I'm rather annoyed, actually, that they're interrupting my tour. Robert goes to the front desk clerk and asks if we can see a room with a balcony overlooking the atrium. And they hesitated. I think he slipped her a 20. They let us in the room so his parents could look out over the balcony. And he and I went out to the balcony. And while standing there looking, he hands me something and says, I think you dropped this. And it was a watch. And I said, I didn't drop a watch. I don't own a watch. And he said, no, it's yours. Look at it. So I looked at it, and it was a very nice watch, and flipped it over, and it said, marry me. All the time, I had not realized his father was recording this.
Oh, my gosh.
And, of course, I immediately said yes and was stunned to find out that prior to my knowledge, He had packed my clothes. He had arranged several rooms at the hotel. He'd made reservations for dinner. He had contacted my boss and got me time off for 2 days, all without me having any clue of this happening. So it was a complete and total surprise. I spent the rest of the afternoon walking around going, how did you, and did you, and what, and I mean, I literally was stunned.
Did you suspect it at all?
No clue. We had talked about it, and I had broached the subject a few times, and we had both kind of decided that, you know, one, without any federal recognition, it's just marriage in name only. And that we were kind of wanting to wait till Indiana passed it, which would be when Hades froze over. Mm. But after the federal government ruling on Defense of Marriage Act came down and we realized we did have rights, that's what prompted him to do it.
And at this time, this was before Illinois had passed same-sex marriage.
It was before Illinois and Hawaii.
And your option was Iowa.
His family is originally from a far southwestern corner of Iowa. Think in Evansville in relation to where Iowa is. That's where he's from.
Okay.
Population 6,000. Hmm. So we were scheduled to be there for Thanksgiving. So we picked the date of November 29th, which Black Friday. We scrambled around to find someone to do the service. Justice of the Peace doesn't work on the day after Thanksgiving. The county clerk doesn't work. So we found a minister that was acceptable to performing it. And this is a small town, conservative town. So we had the wedding, then immediately followed with the reception there. Small reception, maybe 50 people, family, friends, and it was great. Loved it. We shipped my family, my sister, my mother, our bridesmaid, our groomsmen, all out with us on a field trip to the middle of nowhere.
Well, I have to say, you can't ideally get married wherever, but at least his family was in Iowa, which right. I understand is not the case for so many couples.
Coincidentally enough, though, the reason we chose Iowa is the residency is you only have to be there 3 days to vote, to register your car, to file for a marriage certificate. We've had a lesbian couple that did a similar thing. They flew into Iowa, stayed there for 3 days, got married, then flew to Hawaii for their honeymoon. For us, it just worked out that it was coincidental.
Mm-hmm. So you had the wedding ceremony in Iowa, but the reception was here back home.
Right. Well, you know, we had the reception in Iowa for his family and friends. And then, you know, we're from here. We're both politically active and involved with a lot of groups and charities. So we wanted to have a wedding reception for our friends and family and colleagues. We settled on December 6th, which in our shared history is now known as Snowmageddon.
That's right. The listeners will remember that. That was WNIN's big special snow coverage.
Not one of my favorite memories of the whole event. We had booked the hotel, booked caterers, booked cake, had a guest list of 180. Hmm. And at 7 a.m. on December 6th, we wake up to ice, snow, continuing to fall. And that's when the panic ensued.
I'm sure.
We made frantic calls to the hotel. Could we delay? What was the penalty? What do? Do we cancel? Do you cancel? At around 9 o'clock on December 6th, we decided to go ahead with it. Hmm. And that's when the phone calls and the texts started. Of the 180 guests, they started dropping like flies.
And I can't imagine for how much effort it takes to plan a wedding, how much forethought and money and details. And that whole day, you're preoccupied with making sure everything goes accordingly. And then to be getting a flurry of phone calls top of it.
As the calls came in, so did the increase in my blood pressure and stress. And I had probably what will be referred to as many meltdowns that day.
Yeah.
We ended up with about 80 people showing up. It was funny. I have to laugh. I said, a good friend of ours works for the city road crew, been up 17 hours straight. He made it. The mayor was there, which was touching because that was the same week that the mayor had come out against HJR6 and HJR3.
Yeah, and you stopped him at one point in the night and thanked him for that. What did you say?
Well, I told, as the mayor and his wife were leaving, I went up to him and said, thank you for coming. I said, I know you have every possible reason not to be here. At that point, the city was close to declaring a state of emergency. And I said, I want to thank you for coming and thank you for what was probably the best wedding gift anyone could have ever given me with your support to defeat that bill. Now, that said, there was a couple of city council members that were there as well, and they had previously also
supported
it as well. But for the mayor of the third largest city in the state, you know, to do that on the week of my wedding, it was kind of serendipitous for us.
That was Alex Jarvis, a local Evansville businessman who married his husband in Iowa, but had the reception here in Evansville in December. So this has been Weddingnomics. We've been looking at economics, or weddings rather, from an economic lens. And I realize there's a limitation to that. I mean, weddings are a social construction. So I thought we'd put some warmth into this discussion and talk with a sociologist. And so joined with me here in the studio now is Dr. Rhonda Priest, an associate professor of sociology at the University of Southern Indiana. And coincidentally, she is preparing for a wedding as well. Rhonda, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here.
Now, I saw you, before we get into my questions, I saw you taking notes throughout this program. Is there anything that comes to mind right now, particularly in the midst of planning for a wedding, that really struck you?
In big bold letters here, I wrote down the word investment. Oh, man, do I hate that word it comes to weddings.
Tell me why.
Well, you're investing in a wedding like you're going to get something out of it. If you're going to spend more on this, then you're going to have, what, a better marriage? Mm-hmm. You're inoculating yourself against the possibility of divorce, perhaps. I'm not really sure what this investment in this one day, this one ceremony really means.
And it adds to the pressure. When someone is told, this is your day, you have one day, I just can't imagine. I mean, I've been joking, this show has been like preparing for my one big day, planning for it. I can't imagine, you know, if this is like the big hallmark of your life. So,
well,
or it's supposed to be.
Supposed to be. And, you know, we are all affected by advertising. We are all affected by the social media, and it puts that pressure on you, and you feel like if you don't make a big enough investment in this one day, then somehow you will not have a legitimate marriage, a legitimate wedding. And actually, I hear that from people. It said, well, we didn't have a wedding. We went to Vegas. And the focus has really shifted from the actual ceremony, the bonding, to the show part of it, which is really the reception, you know, the receiving of your guests and the entertainment and the food. And you can't, what was it? You can't have a wedding without a cake. I'm pretty sure you can't have a wedding without an officiant, actually, and a marriage license. I'm pretty sure you could skip the cake.
Well, Rhonda, I mean, that brings me just exactly where I needed to be in this conversation. I mean, like I said, when I went to the expo, I could not be a part of that equation without thinking about money. Everybody was talking about the costs of this and that and this service. And so even though they're initiated because of cultural interests and imperatives, they are a business. Have they always been that way? I'm assuming not, because we've had them before currency existed. So why do we assign so much importance to weddings?
Well, I think it was some of the things that I said, that the more recent trend is to legitimize this transition into your new public role, you know, as public spectacle. But interesting enough, I mean, going way back in time here, the wedding itself was an economic transaction. But getting married itself, and some of those rituals are still part of our ceremonies today, the giving away of the bride. It was basically the father, you know, selling his daughter as an economic transaction.
So what does it mean now if that's not the case?
Well, it means different things in different cultures, of course. In the U.S., basically, it is a rite of passage. It's a public recognition of a commitment of taking on a new role in society. And, you know, rituals are actually really important. They tie our generations together. So there are some aspects to the wedding that, you know, you don't And yes, you don't feel like you were at a wedding when the bride's not in the white dress, or if there wasn't a bouquet toss or a cake cutting or something like that, because these are the symbols of that ritual that we have come to, you know, expect, and they're normalized.
In at least in the United States, predominantly Christian culture in that sense.
Definitely, sure. Yes.
Well, so I guess economically or sociologically, let's say how much has the dynamic between couples changed leading up to a wedding? Are more people living together before, dating longer before proposing? What are the trends there?
Well, interesting enough that probably the biggest change is that most couples now meet on the internet. As
really?
Opposed, yes.
That's a big change.
That is. And when I was doing research before I came on, that actually surprised me. Hmm. I still thought that school work, you know, would be up there. But meeting through the internet has quickly taken over as the way that couples meet. And they are engaged longer. And that's in part, I think, due to the economics of the industry as well. Mm-hmm. They're delaying their wedding so that they can save up the money necessary to have a legitimate wedding.
Well, I'll ask you personally, is that part of your plan?
Well, I seem to have been engaged forever. Sometimes it feels like. I got engaged in December 2012 on Christmas Eve, very lovely. But I'm also a professor. We have, you know, a lot of freedom during the summer. And we also have a lot of out-of-town guests. So, yes, a year and a half, which is exactly what the what the norm is for engagement lengths, is exactly what we're having. Mm. But it was more tied to when we had the free time as opposed to the economics.
Well, and it obviously, you know, putting more money toward a wedding ceremony isn't going to guarantee you a healthy relationship. So sociologically, is there an element of a relationship that is a determining factor that will be kind of an insurance, if you will, that says this will be a healthy long-term relationship?
Well, sociologists tend to look at the demographics, and probably the biggest factor is the higher educated the couple is, the more likely they are to have a successful marriage.
Plain and simple.
Plain and simple. That's the number one factor. Wow. So maybe that bodes well for me.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thank you.
An educator, Dr. Rhonda Priest. She's an associate professor of sociology at the University of Southern Indiana. That wraps up our Weddingnomics conversation on the trend. And, you know, looking at Weddingnomics, like I said, from an economic lens can limit sociological and cultural meanings of marriage in society. But that detached perspective is exactly what we need to understand who benefits from the marriage industry in our local economy. Business and political leaders, for example, argue that HJR 3, the amendment banning gay marriage in Indiana, would prohibit the state from economic growth. And if we're looking at weddings, that's a lost source of revenue. If you're curious about a person or project mentioned on today's show, you can visit the trends page at WNIN.org. You can also find the playlist from today's show. Tune in next week when John Gibson hosts The Trend. We're talking about race relations in Evansville, particularly in the wake of the confrontation between the Black community and the police last summer. We'll talk then. I'm your host, Cass Harrington. Thank you so much for listening, and happy Valentine's Day. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. This episode was produced by my help with my co-host, John Gibson. Steve Berger engineered today's program, and the theme music was written by Jeffrey Osman. And I'd also like to dedicate this special wedding show to WNIN's new Vice President of Development, Marcy Krim, who got engaged last week. Cheers! I'm Cass Harrington. This is WNIN-FM, Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.